It used to be when a major appliance conked out, you replaced it with one just like it. But by now you've noticed all the energy-saving and water-saving devices you can buy to save on electricity or water or something. And it's not just with appliances. Lots of mechanical devices available today are vastly improved over their predecessors, which is why Southern Oregon University is thinking about a different approach when it replaces a couple of components in its energy plant. SOU needs new boilers, and they could be natural gas-fired or they could be biomass-fired. The university is exploring right now with the public's help, and we have a total of four people here to talk about what could potentially happen from here. Drew Gilliland is the Southern Oregon University Director of Facilities Management and Planning and Sustainability. He's in the studio. Drew, welcome.
Hey, morning, Jeff.
Good to have you here. Brad Christ is the Chief Information Officer at Southern Oregon University. Also here, Brad.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have on the phone Bill Carson, who's the principal at Carlson Small Power Consultants. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
And Adrienne Dodona is with us as well. She's the public engagement lead at Gene Lawson Associates. Hi, Adrienne.
Hello.
So, Drew, let's start with the easy stuff with you. This begins as a retirement story, in a sense. Tell us about that.
Yeah, what we have is four boilers that we heat our campus with, and we were able to replace a couple of those with stimulus monies about 5 years ago. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough money available to replace the two larger boilers, which are two 400-horsepower boilers. So as those have come to the end of their life, we went forth to looking to replace those and decided, well, instead of just replacing them with natural gas, why don't we look at other sources of energy? You know, we're right here in the Northwest. We know there's lots of leftover slush. They burn it every summer. We're all quite aware of that. And why not look at that option? So I was able to procure a $250,000 grant from the USDA to look at biomass as a potential option. So we did that. We were able to fund three different studies from that grant. And lo and behold, it is an option. We think it's a good option, but, you know, we can always go back to natural gas. So those studies showed that we could have a less expensive form of fuel, also generate our same electricity that we use on this campus. So not only could we heat the campus, but we could now generate our own electricity and offset that. And, you know, as a campus who prides itself in being sustainable and cutting edge, what an opportunity to walk the walk. But obviously, when people think of biomass, they think of large stacks of smoke coming out of the air and pollution. So the studies show that's exactly not what the case is, that it's mostly steam, and we can use precipitators to pull that particulate out of the stream. So why not consider it? But obviously, a decision like this and being as close as we are with the community requires an overall discussion with the community. So that's what we're doing right now is kind of laying out the options, what we think are what we know are the facts, and seeing what the appetite is.
So the plant right now has four boilers and it produces steam and nothing but?
Correct. Right. We heat our campus with steam and hot water. Of course, the steam heats hot water in some locations. Other places we just use steam. So that's exactly right.
All right. So, Brad, I noticed that there's even a separate website within the whole SOU.edu nomenclature just for this to make sure that you can address the public with this.
That's correct. So I've been working with Gene Lawson Associates to coordinate the public outreach. And that includes we're going to be doing some tabling events later this month, as well as I did want to make sure that everybody's aware that we're having a community meeting on November 12th at 6 p.m. in the Rogue River Room in the Stevenson Union, and everybody from the Ashland community is invited, where we'll be sharing more information. We'll also have a panel.
Okay, I think we're having a real problem with that microphone that is not actually doing what it's supposed to do. If you can just slide over a little bit to Drew's, I'll see if I can figure this out.
Sure. Just to reiterate, we're going to have a community meeting on November 12th at 6 p.m. in the Rogue River Room. At the Ashland campus of Southern Oregon University, and we'll have a panel of experts available to answer questions about ranging from folks like Drew to people who are experts in the field of air quality as well as biomass. Folks from the DEQ will be there to be able to answer questions. I just wanted to emphasize that Adrienne and JLA is a neutral third party, so we hired them as part of the grant to help us outreach to the community in a way so that to make sure that everybody's aware that a decision hasn't already been made, that we're really asking for public and community and campus involvement to help us make that decision whether or not it's we continue with natural gas or we continue with biomass. Just to add on a little bit to what Drew had said, you know, in 2007, President Mary Cullinan had signed the President's Initiative on Climate Action. And part of that is a commitment to reduce our carbon emissions. And the majority of carbon emissions on campus, actually almost 92% of the carbon that comes from the campus comes from our heating plant. And so one of the reasons to consider biomass is that it would essentially move us forward almost 20, 30 years towards our goal of carbon neutrality by 2050.
And when did you say the next big meeting is for the public?
That's on November 12th at 6 p.m.
In which room?
The Rogue River Room.
And the Stevenson Union.
Yep, and that information should also be available on the JPR website.
All right, we're talking to Brad Crist, Drew Gilliland at Southern Oregon University, and Bill Carlson at Carlson Small Power Consultants, and Adrian DeDona at Gene Lawson Associates about the concept of building a cogeneration plant to produce both steam and electricity on campus at Southern Oregon University, potentially using biomass as fuel. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area in the Rogue Valley. I still give the one phone number now. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. You can see Drew and Brad on our Facebook page any old minute. Bill Carlson, I want to ask you, the scale we're talking about here, is this eminently doable? You are about small power consultants. Can they make an electrical generation facility in addition to making steam pretty close to what they're doing now?
Yes, Jeff. This is actually a pretty nice opportunity for a small project. I have helped develop about a dozen projects over the last decade or so, and this one sort of hits the sweet spot where you start with the campus heat needs, and then you look at the growth of those over the next couple of decades. You basically match the boiler to that heat needs, and then you see what electricity you can produce by operating that boiler then at its capacity all the time, not just to follow the heat load, but you basically take the excess capacity and you make electricity out of it. The amount of electricity happens to roughly match that used by the campus over time, even though it is unlikely that you would actually supply the campus. You would really offset the campus by selling the electricity on the open market.
Are there any issues, Drew Gilliland, with selling the electricity on the open market?
No, we do think there will be some. There is a market out there for green electricity, obviously. And so a couple sources, Portland, and Washington have utilities that have a need for green power. So, if we're able to get this to keep going, we do think we've found those markets.
All right. So, but I mean, you could go with the basic option of sticking with natural gas and just making steam, right? It doesn't have to be an electrical thing, but it was just an opportunity to consider that.
Yeah, correct. Right now, that's all we're doing. Quite frankly, we're just heating the campus with steam. So that's always a fallback. Although, as we look at this, generating electricity, whether we use natural gas or biomass, does appear to be a viable option. So once again, why not?
Go ahead, Brad. You look like you were to say something there.
The engineering studies have all, which are available on the SOUcogeneration.org website, all make it clear that cogeneration is a much better option because right at the moment, although we are only producing steam, we're actually wasting a great deal of energy in the form of heat. And so a cogeneration option, whether it is natural gas or biomass, makes the most sense going forward. Being able to sell that on the open market and offset our existing energy use as well as planning for additional energy use, because we can expect the campus to continue to grow as well as the electrical needs for the campus to grow. I think Drew has a good example with the North Campus Village, our recently completed residence halls as well as dining facilities. Those don't run on steam. Those actually run on electricity, and that was done in anticipation of pursuing a cogeneration option, again, whether that's natural gas or biomass. But that's really the stated direction.
Adrian DeDona, I want to bring you in here. You're the public engagement lead with Gene Lawson Associates. I have three phone calls ready to go here. So obviously there's a lot of interest in this. I guess that's why you're part of the project.
Yes. I think I add just that added capacity to help lead this process. We're on kind of a quick, a compressed time frame to meet the legislative budget process. And so, we've just been doing a lot of work to get the word out about the project and The website soucogeneration.org has a whole host of information, including a video, and soon we'll have a whole list of frequently asked questions available there. We will advertise our tabling events where the community can come out and meet us in high traffic areas like the Ashland Co-op and the library and the Ashland Farmers Market. And then also coming soon will be an online survey where we'll ask folks to weigh in on the project. So after the community meeting or attending one of the tabling events, people can, after they learn what the options are and have an informed opinion, they can tell us what they think about the project so that SOU has the opportunity to consider that feedback from the community before making a decision.
Cogeneration, the issue on the table. We're talking about Southern Oregon University potentially turning its gas-fired steam plant into a gas and biomass-fired steam and electricity plant. We have Drew Gilliland and Brad Christ from SOU, Adrian Dodoni, you just heard from Gene Lawson Associates, Bill Carlson from Carlson Small Power Consultants, and you can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Sorry. Here goes Robert in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. A couple questions. So it sounds like you've dealt with the issue of the particulate. Because we have such a bad air shed in the Rogue Valley, that you'll be able to scrub the exhaust of any particulate. Is that's true?
Correct. What we're looking at.
So is this going to give off a steam plume? In that process, because, one of the things about Ashland is the aesthetic beauty. Are we going to have a cloud of steam over the plant whenever it's in operation?
So smoke and steam are the big concerns. This is a plume of steam already, isn't there, from the existing plant?
Right, correct. When the temperature is in the low 30s or around the 30 degrees, you see that currently because natural gas does have water that burns off. So you're going to see steam either way, whether we're using natural gas or wood. And yes, in answer to the particulate, technology out there today is fantastic. In fact, a recent study done in, I believe it was, back east, they compared a woody biomass plant to a natural gas and found that the particulates were actually lower in the natural gas, the biomass. So the technology is now available, and quite frankly, we wouldn't do anything that's not state-of-the-art type of system. It's available and is being designed that way.
How extensive would the permitting be from the Department of Environmental Quality within the state of Oregon? I mean, and Ashland is still in some kind of air quality maintenance
area. Non-attainment zone, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And we have engaged the DEQ in this process. And once again, our plant is so small that they have a standard called PM10, which is related to the particulate size, and we would fall well below that. So we would easily qualify for a permit, and we've already, like I said, engaged them. They don't see any reason why, if we don't build it as designed, not only would we fall below that level, we would fall significantly below that level, probably at 20 to 30% of the minimum level required. So we're pretty excited that it would be such minimum impact.
Are you talking about a much greater capacity than the current set of boilers have, if you get to make this changeover?
Yeah. What we currently have is a 200-400 horsepower boiler. This would be 800. So we would be running this year-round because obviously we need to drive that generator. And what we would use the other two for is at cold times of year, January, February, we would kick those up to provide additional heat. So it's designed, as Bill mentioned earlier, to run 24/7 so that we can generate that electricity.
All right. Here's another call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about cogeneration potentially at Southern Oregon University using biomass.
Good morning. I think that's an absolutely great idea. My question is, how does it pencil out compared to using pure solar to do the same thing, primarily in the area of generating your electricity?
Another great question. Currently, we've installed solar on campus. In fact, we've installed 180 kilowatts. And we've pretty much taken up all the available roof space that we can that's feasible for solar. We have a little space still left on the SU, which we hope to take care of in the next couple of years. So, and even with all that, we only generate enough from solar to cover about 5% of our needs. And once again, that only runs during the day. So we love solar. We continue to install it. We have on our new dorms. They have all the roofs facing south have solar. But once again, there's a limit in technology.
Bill Carlson, I want to ask you again from Carlson Small Power Consultants, if there's a plant quite like this that you've had a hand in building yet.
Yes, Jeff. I've developed projects as small as about 1.1 megawatts, which is a little smaller than this project. And basically the best economics occur when you're either heating, it would be even better economics if you were heating with diesel fuel or with propane, as an example. But because the campus is heated by natural gas and the price of natural gas is so volatile, over time you can typically save a lot of money with a small biomass cogen facility versus continuing to heat the campus with gas, because it's simply so much more efficient when you utilize the biomass in a cogeneration application, producing both heat and electricity simultaneously. That boost in efficiency versus doing either separately is really what causes these small projects to pencil out.
Drew, have you taken a look at the supply chain potentially for biomass and whether there's a good supply of the stuff you would need to fuel this, whether at the rate you're talking about consuming it, that you'd be able to continue to feed it over time?
Yeah, we're fortunate living where we are, and we don't have a lot of competition for right now. Because remember, what we're looking at is the non-usable forest products. It's the limbs. It's the things that aren't used for wood products. So even in the local mills, it's items that they wouldn't be using. We've also identified other sources from mills that, if we have to in an emergency, we could access those products, but we do have landowners in this valley right here in around Central Point, and then right across the hills that would be available. So yes, and also the Forest Service does do thinning, such as in a watershed, and those would be available also. Although there are some limits to some areas of that due to elevation and issues to access, but other of it could be made available because it is accessible.
Biomass cogeneration at Southern Oregon University, the topic. We have four guests with us, and we have also Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, thank you. And I really appreciate that they're making this a public process instead of behind closed doors and a decision made away from us. I've been volunteering 2 years with SOCAM, Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, and we generated a paper about biomass for heating and for electricity production. And surprisingly, favored it because that wood would otherwise rot and go into the air anyway. So burning it doesn't really increase the amount of carbon in the air on the short cycle. But and the natural gas option is fraught with all kinds of trouble, because when they mine it, when they ship it, when they hook it up to the pipeline, there's fugitive emissions, and they drive global warming 30 times stronger than carbon dioxide does. So it's not really a great alternative in terms of global warming to use natural gas. But there are issues around feeding a campus with this stuff. Forest floor stuff would be great to use, but it's going to take trucks to move it around. How far does it have to come? How dry is it when it is burned? All these things, I'm sure these guys are smart. They're thinking this through. I'd like to hear some response on that.
All right. Thanks for that, Brad. Drew's already been nodding about knowing what's going up.
Yeah, I don't know if smart's the right term, but there's a lot of other people that are smarter than us, and Bill might want to address this as he was part of the Beck Carlson study. But the studies show we would need about 5 truckloads a day. That would probably be a high, and we would only do that Monday through Friday, between the hours of 7 and 5, because obviously we don't want to impact the neighborhood. You know, there's noise with trucks and that sort of thing. You know, we're kind of lucky we're located where we're at on campus, because we're on major truck routes. So you only have to go 2 blocks off a major truck route to get to the site of this campus. So, yeah, we've talked about it, and we also have some alternate truck routes, but that seems to be the most feasible. And go to our website, and it'll actually show a picture of that route.
How much bigger would the plant have to be to be able to do the biomass burning?
Well, the current plan is located right behind us here, Jeff, and people hardly know it's there. This would actually go over by McNeil by the football stadium.
Okay, a different part of campus
just
altogether.
Off Whiteman, yeah, mm-hmm. Because with the new construction of the McNeil Rec Center, we actually have a landscape yard over there, and a lot of people may not know. That would just be moved and go away, and that's where the plant would go.
Okay, so a different place altogether. Go to Pam and Dexter with our final call of the hour. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, well, we have the Seneca biomass plant up here in the Eugene area, and I know there was a lot of controversy about it, and they were saying that they weren't going to cut trees to burn them, and I'm told that that's happening now, and you just alluded to thinning to cut. So I just wonder what the analysis would be, the carbon offsets from cutting trees that are sequestering carbon to burn them, and if that would really make a lot of sense. And then I guess my follow-up question would be, all right, so how far would you have to, would it be that you could travel to get the slash? Because I love the idea of instead of just burning the slash in the open, burning it to create electricity and heat. But how far could you travel to pick up the slash to make it kind of a benefit for the environment, for the atmosphere?
Okay, let's get those addressed. Thanks for the call, Pam. Appreciate it.
Bill, you want to take that one since you did the study?
Sir Pam's questions. First one, Pam, I was actually involved in the Seneca Project and continue to be at some level, and it's not the case that they're cutting green trees to fuel the plant. There's actually no economics in doing that. When they have a timber harvest, and Seneca has substantial timberlands of their own, the unusable portion of the trees are indeed brought to the plant for burning the limbs and the tops.
All right, so how much travel distance was the other part of her question, quickly?
Yeah, the other one is we anticipate fueling this plant within 30 miles of the campus, using the tops and limbs and brush and that sort of thing.
All right, SOUcogeneration.org, November 12th at 6 p.m. at the Rogue River Room. The next meeting in this, Drew Gilliland, Brad Crist, Bill Carlson, Adrian DeDona, thank you so much for joining us on The Exchange.